and what you think about what we're doing here on the station and any of the things we're talking about. In a couple of minutes, we're going to bring you Gardening with Embark. Pablo Vimas is on vacation this week, so we're going to bring you a reprise of an edition from 2025. But first, here is Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. As a kid, artist David Shepherd would sketch all the flora and fauna he saw. His true love was for plants. But when he moved to Hawaii to study botany, he realized
Hawaii is special because its main character is birds. Birds were the dominant species in terms of animal life. And so all the plants really co-evolved with the birds. You can see that in just how specific the beaks of different species are to the shapes of the flowers here. And so that became part of my art.
David now designs aloha shirts featuring the native plants and wildlife of Hawaii. One design features the i'iwi, a Hawaiian honey creeper.
So the i'iwi birds dart from flower to flower to flower very quickly. Well, the Hawaiians saw this and they thought of the metaphor that it was like procreation, the metaphor for the health of the forest, because only in its procreation can it exist.
Then, hidden among the trees, David has drawn kahuli, or native land snails.
Their existence in the forest is special because if they were around, it was said that the forest would sing. And songs are also a very important element of Hawaiian culture because it's how things are passed on from generation to generation. It's how you communicate what the world is. So these snails are singing, right? And then you have the birds that are a symbolic of procreation. And so the combination is that this is Hawaii. This is the perpetuation of it.
See pictures of David's designs at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something every day, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday. From 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
Listen to Scream Therapy, a show about the link between punk rock and mental health, hosted by me, Jason Schurz. I've been part of the music scene for more than 30 years. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and my whole life was thrown sideways. As part of my recovery, I've slowly returned to the music that I love. Join me and my resilient guests for no-holds-barred conversations right here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser University, Thursdays at 12:30 a.m. And until then, take care and be well.
And in a moment, we're going to be bringing you a reprise version of Gardening with Embark with our expert, gardens expert, Pablo Vimas. And then after that, we're going to be talking about Bob Hope.
Oh, a book from 1960s.
What's the book called?
It's one of those things that they can't really decide. Five Women I Love, Bob Hope's Vietnam Story by Bob Hope. It says his name twice. You know, they're so stupid. Who wrote that thing? I guess it's Bob Hope.
Well, it's funny because that title somehow gives me a completely different expectation of what, you know. I thought he was just, we'll see what comes of it when we get there in about 13 minutes. But first, it's time for Gardening with Embark.
All right, welcome to Gardening with Embark. Joining me here in the studio is Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society and our resident gardening expert.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So we've spent the last couple of weeks, we're sort of in the middle, getting to the middle of the season, and we already have, you know, some of the crops we put in the ground coming up.
Correct, yeah.
And we're harvesting them, and we're also have some other plants that are sort of coming up that we'll be producing later in the summer that we need to think about. So we're busy with everything that's going on.
Yes. But, as you mentioned, the garden is very busy at the moment with lots of crops and garden beds full of vegetables, harvesting, maintaining, watering.
But even with all that going on, we still need to be thinking ahead. We can't get caught up in the moment.
Correct. Correct. So here at Embark, we encourage to all our gardeners to garden year-round. So they just don't focus on spring and summer, but let's go over the winter too. So at the moment, it's just the right time to start thinking what I would like to grow in the fall. Because as you mentioned, we are just so busy harvesting time, pinching, keeping the garden wet, watered and weeded and mulched and all that. But let's stop a little while and think why I would like to grow over the fall. So at the moment, we have a good weather. So the soil is warm, lots of long days. So it's the time to select a section in the garden that is not full sun, but is in the shade or half shade. And that will be where we start our nursery. And particularly if we would like to have Brussels sprouts for Christmas, for winter break, now is the time to start our nursery where we come and start all Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, broccoli, overwintering cabbage, and as well the Walla Walla onions if we want to start from seeds. So this is now is the right time to start because the Walla Walla onions is a very nice vegetable that overwinters very nice. So we can keep it growing over the winter. So now, but they are very slow. They are very slow seeds. So we need to start right in these weeks, these 2 weeks that we have. So we can have a nice little seedlings by September to transplant when we harvest all our summer crops.
Excellent. So you mentioned about the plot should be sort of part sun, part shade. Why is that important?
Because it's important because we don't want to having to water constantly. So we want that the seedlings don't get too much sun when they are so young. So we just want them to get this good weather, but not to overexpose to the sun. And that as well, because when nurseries already need to be frequently watered. But if we put in the direct sun, we will almost watering every day. So we don't want to do that. Yeah. So keep the soil moist, but in a nice shady area. Or at the moment, even it's good because at the moment as well, we have to identify which area for our garden site has this kind of environment.
Right.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. So here, for instance, in the learning garden, we have a garden bed underneath a tree. So this is our preferred area. So the sunlight just filters to the leaves of the tree and reach to the garden bed. And that garden bed is always moist. We don't have to worry about that. Oh, I forgot to water. And when we realize, our plants are all suffering in stress. So it's nice, keeps the soil moist, not much light. But again, it's nice and warm and the plants are just happy.
So it sounds like, we're sort of going back to planning gardens, because often, people are focusing on things like tomatoes, which want lots and lots and lots of sun. But when you're planning your garden, putting your boxes out, it might be a good idea to sort of have some. Maybe you got one over in a different part of your garden or area that is like this with some shade.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So in our garden here, we have some boxes that are directly full sun. So every day get the sun. And the others are underneath trees, so they are in the shade. So those are our favorite boxes to start a nursery.
Right. So with these fall and winter plants, are we mainly talking starting from seeds here?
Correct, yes. Yeah. So we start from seeds, Walla Walla onions, the Brussels sprouts. We can have cabbages, overwinter cabbages, broccoli, sprouting broccolinis. They are the mainly the main crops that we would like for the fall. Now, we should remember that the vegetables that do very well in the fall are the same vegetables that do very well in the spring. However, when we start in the spring, the temperature goes from cold to hot. On fall, it's the opposite. It goes from hot to cold, but the same type of vegetables. So if the vegetables can stand cold weather, they will stand the cold weather at the end of the season or the fall. So so peas very much starting in September. So by October, they are just in the right weather that they like it. But starting right now is for all those vegetables that take at least 8 weeks to germinate and turn into a nice seedling.
So that's quite a long time, 8 weeks. So we're going to be putting things in the ground now. and tending that ground with regular watering and stuff. But it's going to be a little while before we start seeing shoots coming up.
Yes. So at the moment, we will put the seeds and they germinate in 1 week. They should be up. Okay. And then we have to take care, because at the moment, you know that there is slugs around, which love seedlings.
Yeah.
We have aphids around that as well like seedlings. So, yeah, so we have to take care of those little seedlings. And I usually overseed. So just counting that some of them are going to be eaten by the slugs.
Right. So are you out there every day looking for issues? Or how attentive do we need to be to these shoots?
Well, every time that we water the garden, we get in contact with our plants. I advise to do hand watering. So water with a watering wand, and you go and at the time touch new plants. If you are watering the soil, you will be removing, keeping your leaves around, collecting the plant, hiking the plant while you water around the soil. Okay. So that's the way that we get in contact with the plants, and we can see, oh, there is aphids, there are ants, and why there are so many ants. And it's beautiful to see when there is a ladybug around.
Mm-hmm.
And slugs, usually they show up around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So if you garden has troubles with the slugs, just show up around 5 o'clock, and then you will find them just coming out from their hiding, ready to start munching on the vegetables. There is two options. You pick them and dispose them in the composter or somewhere else, or you just find a way to get rid of the slugs. With aphids, very much I look for ants. Mm-hmm. When ants go up and down a plant, means that there are aphids, and I just follow the ants and they direct me where the aphids are. At the moment, we have two types that I have shown. We have the black ones, the black aphids, and the green aphids. They are the two ones I have seen in our gardens. And I keep an eye on the population. So if there is one plant that is sick, that's all right. And the nearby plants are all okay. They are not affected, so that's okay. And if it's a small population, I still use my hands to squish the aphids into the underneath the leaves. It's a squish. I avoid doing strong spraying, jet spraying on the leaves. The leaves get damaged. So I avoid that because the leaves are the food factory of a plant. They through photosynthesis, they create sugars. So why to damage that? So I just prefer to squish them. So aphids, if they're ladybugs, awesome. Now at the moment, ladybugs are laying eggs.
Yeah,
which they turn into a small caterpillar, they will say, and that caterpillar will turn into another insect, look like a little crocodile, and then we turn into a ladybug. So we have to be very careful that we don't destroy the middle stages of the ladybug from egg to adult. So we have to be very careful that not by accident we just, oh, this is an insect, and squish it.
Because they're your friends.
They're our friends, indeed. Yeah.
So we're putting in seeds in the ground now. How long before we get towards a harvest?
Okay, so we put the seeds right now. So we have 1 week, they germinate. And from there, we count 7 more weeks, so which sends us almost at the beginning of September.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the seedlings will be ready to transplant to their final stage, and from there the transplanted we again count another 10 weeks.
So we're putting in that germinating, getting them to a strong point, and then at the end of the summer, beginning of the fall, we're going to move them over to some of the places that our summer crops are finishing up.
Correct. So by the end of September, for instance, I tend to remove all my tomato plants because there is no point to them longer. They should have been produced by then. All the tomatoes should have been, the red tomatoes being harvested, the green tomatoes can be harvested and mature indoors. So that space now becomes free and ready for welcoming new crops, the fall crops.
Excellent. Well, it's week 25, and that's these timelines that we're talking about here, and getting things done at the right time is why we're tracking it by these week numbers, because you need to be on time. So this sounds really exciting for people who maybe focus on the summer as the obvious growing season, but you can really get things going and get some wonderful wonderful harvests coming in the fall.
That's right. So we work by weekends, by weeks, I'm sorry, as keep track what's happening. So week 25, we start in the week 25. This weekend is the summer solstice, which is great. After that, we have to think, oh, the days are getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
And then we have week 26, that is the, we must start our nursery by that time. So we have 2 weeks to play, to think what I'm going to plant, what I get my seeds, find a spot where I want to plant, prepare it. And then by week 26, by the end of week 26, we have started our nursery. And then we have the 10 weeks of school holidays, elementary, secondary school. So 10 weeks of holidays, 10 weeks for us to grow our nursery. When we return in September, the first, second week, we say, okay, which plant have ended producing? And we can start our fall gardening in September. So, yeah, so it's very, very quick going. And then by September as well, we will start thinking, by week 36, we will start thinking on winterizing our garden.
Right.
Because we had to know that by week 41, we will have the first frost. So it's, once we get September, things cool off very fast.
Yeah.
We don't want to get caught like, oh, I forgot to buy the plastic, I forgot to build my hoop house and all that.
Well, excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo. Everyone should be, if you want your fall crops, and you got some time, a little window right now to get things started, and you're going to have some plants ready to transfer in the fall and some nice harvests. Thanks so much for explaining all that to us today.
Well, happy to share our experiences here from the garden.
Thank you, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. How do people find out more about Embark?
Embark is located in the Student Union building in the ground floor. You can find us and our work at embarksustainability.org or through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.
And Pablo will be back next week with a brand new episode of Gardening with Embark as we head into the real part of the summer, into July. Peter?
Okay, so I'm going to read a paragraph.
So this is from the book about Bob Hope, which is...
Bob Hope taking a tour of Vietnam.
I checked. It seems that November 1967 was when the hardcover came out of this. It's about the 1966 tour, including the big Christmas thing. And this is the fifth printing, a soft copy, November 1969.
So this would be pretty relatively early in the American involvement. Not involvement, but ramping up of the war, and perhaps before the public opinion had really turned against it.
Well, his tour, which is talked about, is 1966, but this the hardcover was first published November 1967.
All right, I'll let you do
and your... the Tet Offensive is early 68. Yeah. Anyway, so here's a paragraph from the book, and page 103. Senator Fulbright said that Saigon has become an American brothel, and that many Vietnamese have been forced, through GI-caused inflation, to put up their wives and daughters as bar girls and also mistresses. That's the story of my life. After I get back from Saigon, Senator Fulbright tells me where the action is. I get the feeling that I'm in the wrong branch of the entertainment business. Well, you're laughing at that. This is kind of not good.
I'm not laughing because it's not actually funny.
I mean, are you a bit shocked that something was said by Mr. Hope like this?
Well, I'm shocked that he'd say so casually about it.
I mean, you know? It's not good. I mean, it's sort of I don't know what to say about that. This is even worse than you might even think.
I mean, I was kind of expecting it to go in the direction that you're going to make some sort of comment about how bad things were getting but no, it's like, oh, he goes completely the other way. You know, how bad the American influence was when that starts happening. But it also speaks to, you know, not seeing, you know, I mean, if that was happening to American wives and daughters, they'd be shocked, but it's happening to Vietnamese way over there. It's not. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying with a comment like that.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a shocking thing. Rolling Stone had an interview with him in 1980, mm-hmm. which I finally did years after that, read the entire interview. But I remember when it came out, and I didn't even know he would say something like that, actually. Yeah. But I was a bit kind of shocked by it, even though I had skimmed through it. That, you know, like, I like the Bob Hope movie, even though the jokes were out of date, you know. There's one joke he does in My Favorite Spy where he's hanging from a ladder. A fire engine is going around. He's hanging from the ladder. And this is a 1951 film. And he goes, this is the stuff you can't, but this is what you can't see on like TV. And yeah. I'm watching it on TV, so it's a bit out of date. He's meaning in the movie theaters when they were out against television, he makes the joke, well, you can't see this kind of stuff on TV. And of course, it's kind of weird when you do see it on TV. But so I always thought, you know, I didn't really know the full thing about, he never backed down. He died in 2003 at the age of 100. He never backed down what his position was in Vietnam. He never said, oh, maybe we made a mistake. Maybe. No, he never backed down. Right. And the Rolling Stone interview, I think it's been a while since I did read it on microfilm, the Rolling Stone one, whether it was more like, you know, when you have like an interview or like, you know, when they don't have like a play, you know, you have Bob Hope, Rolling Stone or whatever it was. They also do a bit of a background on his life. Now, one thing that he supposedly said was he was a boxer, and that's how he got his nose out of joint.
Right.
And then he got into comedy or show business. That actually, what happened was he was a logger, and he had a major accident. And he wasn't even going to go into boxing. He was just a logger.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an accident, and they performed plastic surgery on him. So he wasn't born that way. The other thing was, if you look when he was younger, like in the 1930s, he kind of improved with it through age, ironically, like that thing was the nose. But you're not kind of born with that, usually. Mm-hmm. So he... It was a major kind of shock. He wakes up and they said, well, we did the best we could. And plastic surgery, I used to think they injected plastic. It's where they actually stretch the skin and so on. You know.
It's plastic in the sense of being malleable.
Yeah. So he must have figured, well, might as well go into boxing. I already have a major injury. And he had the boxing career, which did not cause the nose to be that way. He made a joke of it. Like he said, I'm on the canvas so many times, but they call me Rembrandt. You know, he made light of this, like he makes light of that, you know. So when I at first saw it, I was kind of shocked because he was sort of vulgar too, you know. He had a bit of vulgarity. And that's when I first heard about his involvement going to Vietnam, the backing of it. And I was kind of shocked by it because it was like, oh, you're kind of a liar because you make your out that you're of some other era, a better era, when people weren't telling dirty jokes like Lenny Bruce or something. And you really aren't. You're some other kind of person. You're a darker kind of person is what you really are, it seems to me. And this really, because this is sort of like an underground thing in a way, because a lot of people wouldn't read it.
You mean the book?
Yeah, the book. Because I guess it was a proverbial bestseller. But I mean, it sort of said, well, this is the truth about when you fight wars, you have sex with these women occasionally. In fact, did you know that when they had the D-Day landing, there were actual condoms in the actual backpack. And what happened was the D-Day land, this is, I'll just bring it up, is that they weren't counting on this tidal thing to happen. Yeah. That's why they had some who couldn't swim. And so they figured, well, you don't have to swim because it's just going to land there. And the people were stuck because they had to change because of the tidal things. And if you couldn't swim, you died.
Yep.
And the first thing you had to do was take off the backpack. Forget it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm actually in the middle of reading a book about the D-Day campaign.
Oh, did I see anything misinformation?
No. a lot of the people arriving at the beachhead did die from drowning because sometimes the landing ships ran aground, sometimes because they were under fire from beach defenses that the skippers of the landing craft let the ramps down a bit too early into water that was too deep. And of course, you know, the soldiers were weighed down with like 60 pounds or 80 pounds of gear on their back, plus, you know, fully dressed in boots and stuff. And it was, so many, you know, drowned, and then of course had to climb out of the water up the beach into machine gun fire and whatnot from the German defenders.
Well, a few weeks ago, I kind of put down Winston Churchill, as you might remember.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting, Winston Churchill was against the D-Day landing. He said there's no honor in it because it's just a crap shot. I mean, even if they didn't have the tidal wave incident they weren't planning on, once you're on that beach, it's just a crap shot. And that's why it was successful, because the Germans said, well, they're not going to send a bunch of people into machine fire, because that's what they had up on top. And so it was kind of successful because they said, well, it's going to be that some of them are going to die, but a certain critical mass of them are going to go over and do the... Is that the Battle of the Bulge, I guess?
That comes later.
Okay.
So let's get back to the Bob Hope book. So you've read this, I take it?
I've skimmed it.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I presume he talks about the you know, doing the USO shows.
Yeah, he
does. Which stands for United Service Organization, but they did entertainment for the troops through... what else does he talk about in here?
I mean, well, the five women he loved, one is Raquel Welch.
They're like the women
the women who went on,
who are on the tour with him.
Yeah. And it doesn't make Raquel Welch look very good that she was very involved with these tours. But she was. And she just died a little while ago, actually. Yeah. But anyway, I know. It's like...
What else do they talk about, though?
What else do they talk? Well, let's... have we got time for the concluding thoughts here?
Sure.
Yeah. Usually you hear a serviceman say, I got 52 more days before I go home. But a lot of these guys are too busy fighting for their lives to stop and count days till they can go back to Shangri-La. They're not about to give up, because they know if they walked out of this bamboo obstacle course, it'd be like saying to the commies, come and get it. There's all kind of American guys over there, all doing different jobs, all making some kind of sacrifice, and it makes you proud to meet and share the holidays with them. Everyone agreed it was a ball, and for me personally, I have to lift a little bit from Will Rogers and say, I never met a GI I didn't like.
Well, that sounds like a bit of propaganda.
Anyway, I won't bring it for next week, don't worry. So we've done with that book.
I'm pretty sure, especially when you're on a tour of duty with a fixed amount of time, unlike, say, in the Second World War, most previous wars, where you were there for the duration, you were there till things were finished. I bet they were in Vietnam, I bet they were always counting the days, because it's like, I'm here for 1 year, and, you know... I'd be watching the clock the whole time. Anyway, that's our show. Any last thought? You got like 5 seconds.
No, we
He's dead now. He's dead, Jim. So,
all right. Thanks for listening today. This has been Speak Up. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up right now.